smile and a nod, and they moved on through the crowd. Richard wondered where Michael was. It seemed odd that he wasn't out yet. Even though he had lost his appetite, he knew Kaylin hadn't eaten in 2 days. With all the tempting food around, he decided she must have remarkable self-control. The delicious smells were starting to change his mind about his appetite. He leaned closer to her. Hungry? Very. He guided her over to a long table with food piled in tiers. There were large, steaming platters of sausages and meats, boiled potatoes, dried fish of several kinds, grilled fish, chicken, turkey, mounds of raw vegetables sliced into strips, big tureens of cabbage and sausage soup, onion soup and spice soup, platters of breads, cheeses, fruits, pies and cakes, and casks of wine and ale. Servants were constantly coming and going to keep the platters full. Kaylin scrutinized them. Some of the serving girls have long hair. That is allowed. Richard looked around, a little bewildered. Yes, anyone can have any kind of hair they want. Look. He held his arm close to his chest and pointed as he leaned toward her. Those women over there are counselors. Some have short hair, some have long, whatever they want. He looked at her out of the corner of his eye. Do people tell you to cut your hair? She lifted an eyebrow to him. No. No one has ever asked me to cut my hair. It is simply that where I come from, the length of a woman's hair has a certain social significance. Does that mean that you are someone of considerable standing? He took the edge off the question with a playful smile. Seeing as how you have such long, beautiful hair, I mean. She gave him back a small smile, devoid of joy. Some think so. I could only expect that after this morning the thought had entered your mind. We all can be only what we are. Nothing more or less. Well, if I ask anything a friend shouldn't, just kick me. Her smile brightened into the same tight-lipped one she had given him before. The smile of sharing. It made him grin. He turned to the food and found one of his favorites. Small ribs with a spice sauce. Put a few on a small white plate and handed it to her. Try these first, they're my most treasured. Kaylin held the dish at arm's length, eyeing it suspiciously. What creature's meat is this? It's pork, he said, a little surprised. You know, from a pig. Try it. It's the best thing here, I promise. She relaxed, brought the plate close, and ate the meat. He ate a half dozen himself, savoring every bite. He put some sausages on their plates. Here, have some of these, too. Her suspicion flared anew. What are they made of? Pork and beef. Some spices, I don't know what kinds. Why? There are some kinds of things you don't eat. Some kinds, she said noncommittally before eating a sausage. May I have some spice soup, please? He ladled the soup into a fine white bowl with a gold rim and traded it for her plate. She took the bowl in both hands and tried it. A smile came to her face. It's good, just like I make. I don't think our two homelands are as different as you fear. As she drank the remainder of the soup, Richard, feeling better about what she said, picked up a thick slice of bread, put strips of chicken meat on it, and when she finished the soup, exchanged the bread for her bowl. She took the bread with chicken and started moving to the side of the room while she ate. He set the soup bowl down and followed behind, shaking an occasional hand. Their owners cast a critical eye at the way he was dressed. When she reached a deserted spot near a column, she turned to face him. "Please get me a piece of cheese." "Sure. What kind?" She scanned the throng. "Any kind." Richard worked his way back through the crowd to the food table and picked up 2 pieces of cheese, eating one along his way back to Kaylin. She took the cheese when he handed it to her, but instead of eating it, she let her arms slip to her side and let the cheese fall to the floor, as if she had forgotten she was holding it. "Wrong kind?" Her tone was distant. "I hate cheese." She was staring past him to a spot across the room. Richard frowned. "Then why did you ask for it?" There was a hint of irritation in his voice. "Keep looking at me," she said, her eyes returning to his. "There are two men behind you across the room. They have been watching us. I wanted to know if it was me or you they were watching. When I sent you for the food, they watched you go and come back. They paid no attention to me. It is you they are watching." Richard put his hands on her shoulders and turned her to see for himself. He scanned over the heads of the crowd to the far side of the room. "They're just two of Michael's aides. They know me. They're probably wondering where I've been and why I look such a mess." He looked into her eyes and spoke softly so that no one would hear. "It's all right, Kalin. Relax. Those men from this morning are dead. You are safe now." She shook her head. "More will follow. I shall not be with you. I do not want to endanger your life any more than I already have. You are my friend."
"There is no way another quad could track you now, not once you have come here, to Heartland. It's impossible." He knew enough about tracking to feel confident that he was telling her the truth. Kalin hooked a finger in the neck of his shirt and drew his face close. There was a flash of angry intolerance in her green eyes. Her voice came in a slow, harsh whisper. "When I left my homeland, five wizards cast spells over my tracks so none could know where I went or follow, and then they killed themselves so they could not be made to talk." Her teeth were gritted in anger, and her eyes were wet. She was starting to tremble. "Wizards?" Richard went rigid. At last he let out his breath and took her hand gently from his shirt, holding it in both of his, his voice barely audible over the din. "I'm sorry." "Richard, I am scared to death." She was trembling more now. "If you hadn't been there today, you don't know what would have happened to me. The dying would have been the best of it. You don't know about those men." She shook uncontrollably, giving herself over to her fear. Cold bumps ran up his arms. He eased her back behind the column where they couldn't be observed. "I'm sorry, Kalin. I don't know what any of this is about. You know at least some of it, but I'm in the dark. I'm scared, too. Today on the cliff, I've never been that afraid. And I didn't really do much of anything that would have saved us." Seeing her need was giving him the courage to reassure her. "What you did," she said, struggling to get the words out, "was enough to make a difference. It was enough to save us. No matter how little you think it was enough. If you hadn't helped me, I don't want my being here to bring you to harm." He squeezed her hand tighter. "It won't. I have a friend, Zed. He may be able to tell us what we can do to keep you safe. He's a little strange, but he's the smartest man I know. If there's anyone who would know what to do, it's Zed. If you can be tracked anywhere, then there is no place for you to run. They will find you. Let me take you to Zed. As soon as Michael gives his speech, we will go to my house. You can sit in front of the fire, and in the morning I'll take you to Zed." He smiled and pointed with his chin to a window near them. "Look over there." She turned to see Chase outside a tall, round-topped window. The boundary warden glanced back over his shoulder and gave her a wink and a heartening grin before resuming his scan of the area. To Chase, a quad would be just a bit of fun. While he was taking care of them, he'd be telling you a story about some real trouble. He's been watching out for you since we told him of the men. That brought a small smile, but it quickly faded. "There is more to it. I thought I was going to be safe by coming to Westland. I should have been. Richard, I came across the boundary only with the help of magic." She was still shaking, but starting to regain control of herself, taking strength from him. "I do not know how those men came across. They should not have been able to. They should not have even known I left the Midlands. Somehow the rules have changed." "We'll deal with that tomorrow. For now you are safe. Besides, it would take another quad days to get here, wouldn't it? That will give us time to make plans." She gave a nod. "Thank you, Richard Cipher. My friend. But know that if I bring danger to you, I will leave before it can harm you." She took her hand back and wiped the bottom lids of her eyes. "I'm still hungry. Could we have more?"
Richard smiled.
"Sure. What would you like?"
"Some more of your little treasures?"
They went back to the food and ate while they waited for Michael. Richard felt better, not about the things she told him, but because at least he knew a little more, and because he had made her feel safer. Somehow he would find the answer to her problem, and he would know what was going on with the boundary. As much as he feared the answers, he would know them.
Whispers rippled through the crowd as heads turned to the far side of the room. It was Michael.
Richard took Halen's hand and moved to the side of the room, closer to his brother, so they could watch. As Michael stepped up onto a platform, Richard realized why it had taken him so long to come out. He had been waiting for the sunlight to fall on that spot, so he could stand in the light and be lit in its glory for all to see. Not only was he shorter than Richard, but heavier and softer. Sunlight lit his mop of unruly hair. His upper lip proudly displayed a mustache. He wore baggy white trousers, and his white tunic with bloused sleeves was cinched at the waist by a gold belt. Standing there in the sunlight, Michael positively gleamed, casting the same cold, eerie glow the marble did when struck by the sun. He stood out in stark relief against the shadowed background. Richard held up his hand to catch his attention. Michael saw the hand and smiled at his brother, holding his eyes for a moment as he began speaking, before shifting his gaze to the crowd. "Ladies and gentlemen, today I accepted the position of First Counselor of Westland." A roar went up from the room. Michael listened without moving, then thrust his arms suddenly into the air, calling for silence. He waited until every last cough died out. "The counselors from all of Westland selected me to lead us in these times of challenge, because I have the courage and vision to take us into a new era. Too long we have lived looking to the past and not to the future. Too long we have chased old ghosts and been blind to new callings. Too long we have listened to those who would seek to drag us into war, and ignored those who would guide us on a path to peace." The crowd went wild. Richard was dumbfounded. What was Michael talking about? What war? There was no one to have a war with. Michael held up his hands again, and not waiting for quiet this time, went on. "I will not stand by while the Westland is put into peril by these traitors." His face was red and angry. The crowd roared again, this time with fists jabbing the air. They chanted Michael's name. Richard and Kalin looked at each other. "Concerned citizens have come forward to identify these cowards, these traitors. At this very moment, as we join our hearts here today in a common goal, the boundary wardens protect us while the army is rounding up these conspirators who plot against the government. They are not the common criminals you might think, but respected men in high authority."
Murmurs swept across the assembly.
Richard was stunned. Could it be true? A conspiracy? His brother hadn't gotten where he was by not knowing what was going on. Men in high authority. That would certainly explain why Chase didn't know anything about it. Michael stood in the shaft of sunlight, waiting for the whispering to die down. When he began again, his voice was low and warm. "But that is past history. Today we look to our new course. One reason I was chosen as First Counselor is because, being a Heartlander, I have lived my life in the shadow of the boundary, a shadow that has shaded all our lives. But that is looking to the past. The light of a new day always chases the shadows of the night away and shows us that the shape of our fears is only the ghost of our own minds. We must look forward to a day when the boundary will no longer be there. For nothing lasts forever, does it? When that day comes, we must be ready to extend a hand of friendship and not a sword, as some would have us do. That only leads to the futility of war and needless dying. Should we be wasting our resources, preparing to do battle with a people we have been long separated from, a people who were the ancestors to many of us here? Should we be ready to do violence to our brothers and sisters simply because we don't know them? What a waste! Our resources should be spent eliminating the real suffering around us. When the time comes, maybe not in our lifetime, but it will come, we should be ready to welcome our long-separated brothers and sisters. We must not join only the two lands, but all three. For someday, just as the boundary between Westland and the Midlands will fade away, so too will the second boundary between the Midlands and Dahara, and all three lands shall be one. We can look to a day when we can share the joy of reunion, if we have the heart, and that joy will spread from here, today, in Heartland. This is why I have moved to stop those who would plunge us into war with our brothers and sisters merely because someday the boundaries will fade away. This does not mean we don't need the army, for we can never know what real threats lie in our path to peace. But we know there is no need to invent them.
Michael swept his hand out over the crowd.
We in this room are the future. It is your responsibility as councillors of Westland to carry the word throughout the country. Take our message of peace to the good people. They will see the truth in your hearts. Please help me. I want our children and our grandchildren to be the beneficiaries of what we lay down here today. I want us to set a course for peace to carry us into the future, so when the time comes, future generations will benefit and thank us.
Michael stood with his head bowed and both his fists held tightly to his chest. The sunlight glowed about him. The audience was so moved that they stood in absolute silence. Richard saw men in tears and women weeping openly. All eyes were on Michael, who stood still as stone. Richard was stunned. He had never heard his brother speak with such conviction or eloquence. It all seemed to make such sense. After all, here he stood with a woman from across the boundary, from the Midlands, and she was already his friend. But then, four others had tried to kill him. No, not exactly, he thought. They wanted to kill her. He was just in the way. They had offered to let him go, and it was his decision to stand and fight. He had always been fearful of those from across the boundary, but now he was friends with one, just as Michael said. He was starting to see his brother in a new light. People had been moved by Michael's words in a way Richard had never witnessed. Michael was pleading for peace and friendship with other peoples. What could be wrong with that? Why did he feel so uneasy?
"And now to the other part," Michael continued, "to the real suffering around us. While we have worried about the boundaries that have not harmed a single one of us, many of our families, friends, and neighbors have suffered and died. Tragic and needless deaths in accidents with fire." "Yes, that is what I said, fire."
People mumbled in confusion. Michael was starting to lose his bond with the crowd. He seemed to expect it. He looked from face to face, letting the confusion build, and then dramatically he thrust his hand out, his finger pointing.
"At Richard!" "There!"
he screamed. Everyone turned as one. Hundreds of eyes looked at Richard.
"There stands my beloved brother!"
Richard tried to shrink.
"My beloved brother who shares with me..."
He pounded a fist to his chest.
"The tragedy of losing our own mother to fire. Fire took our mother from us when we were young, and left us to grow up alone, without her love and care, without her guidance. It was not some imagined enemy from across a boundary that took her, but an enemy of fire. She couldn't be there to comfort us when we hurt, when we cried in the night. And the thing that wounds the most is that it didn't have to be."
Tears, glistening in the sunlight, ran down Michael's cheeks.
"I am sorry, friends. Please forgive me."
He wiped the tears with a handkerchief he had handy.
"It's just that only this morning I heard of another fire that took a fine young mother and father, and left their daughter an orphan." It brought my own pain back to me, and I couldn't remain silent. Everyone was now solidly back with him. Their tears flowed freely. A woman put her arm around Richard's shoulder as he stood numb. She whispered how sorry she was. "I wonder how many of you have shared the pain my brother and I live with every day. Please, those of you who have a loved one or a friend who has been hurt or even killed by fire, please, hold up your hands." Quite a few hands went up, and there was wailing from some in the crowd. "There, my friends," he said hoarsely, spreading his arms wide. "There is the suffering among us. We need look no further than this room." Richard tried to swallow the lump in his throat as the memory of that horror came back to him. A man who had imagined their father had cheated him, lost his temper and knocked a lamp off a table as Richard and his brothers slept in the back bedroom. While the man dragged his father outside, beating him, his mother pulled Richard and his brother from the burning house, then ran back inside to save something, they never knew what, and was burned alive. Her screams brought the man to his senses, and he and their father tried to save her, but couldn't. Filled with guilt and revulsion at what he had caused, the man ran off crying and yelling that he was sorry. That, his father had told them 1,000 times, was the result of a man losing his temper. Michael shrugged it off. Richard took it to heart. It had instilled in him a dread of his own anger, and whenever it threatened to come out, he choked it off. Michael was wrong. Fire had not killed their mother. Anger had. Arms hanging limply at his side, head bowed, Michael spoke softly again. "What can we do about the danger to our families from fire?" He shook his head sadly. "I do not know, my friends, but I am forming a commission on the problem, and I urge any concerned citizen to come forward with suggestions. My door always stands open. Together we can do something. Together we will do something. And now, my friends, please excuse me, and allow me to go comfort my brother, as I am afraid bringing out our personal tragedy was a surprise to him, and I must ask his forgiveness." He hopped down off the stand, the crowd parting to let him through. A few hands reached out to touch him as he passed. He ignored them. Richard stood and glared as his brother strode to him. The crowd moved away. Only Kaylin stayed at his side, her fingers lightly touching his arm. People went back to the food and began talking excitedly among themselves, about themselves, and forgot him. Richard stood tall and choked off his anger. Smiling, Michael slapped Richard on the shoulder.
"Great speech," he congratulated himself. "What did you think?"
Richard looked down at the patterns on the marble floor. "Why did you bring her death into it? Why did you have to tell everyone about it? Why did you use her like that?" Michael put an arm around Richard's shoulder.
"I know it hurts, and I am sorry, but it's for a greater good. Did you see the tears in their eyes? The things I've started are going to take us all to a better life and help Westland grow to prominence. I believe what I said. We have to look to the challenge of the future with excitement, not fear."
"And what did you mean about the boundaries?"
"Things are changing, Richard. I have to stay ahead of them."
The smile was gone.
"That's all I meant. The boundaries won't last forever. I don't think they were ever meant to. We all have to be ready to face up to that."
Richard changed the subject. "What have you found out about Father's murder? Have the trackers picked up anything?" Michael took his arm back.
"Grow up, Richard. George was an old fool. He was always picking up things that didn't belong to him. He probably got caught with something that belonged to the wrong person, a person with a bad temper and a big knife." "That's not true, and you know it."
Richard hated the way Michael called their father George.
"He never stole anything in his life."
"Just because the person you take it from is long dead, that doesn't mean you have any right to it. Someone else obviously wanted it back."
"How do you know all this?" Richard demanded. "What have you found out?"
"Nothing. It's common sense.
The house was torn apart. Someone was looking for something. They didn't find it. George wouldn't tell them where it was. They killed him. That's all there is to it.
The tracker said there were no tracks. We'll probably never know who did it.
Michael glared.
You had better learn to live with that fact.
Richard let out a deep breath. It made sense. Someone was looking for something.
He shouldn't be angry with Michael because he couldn't find out who.
Michael had tried. Richard wondered how there could be no tracks.
I'm sorry. Maybe you're right, Michael.
Another thought struck him.
So it didn't have anything to do with this conspiracy? It wasn't those men trying to get to you?
Michael waved his hand.
No, it had nothing to do with that. That problem has been taken care of. Don't worry about me. I'm safe. Everything is all right.
Richard nodded.
Michael's face turned to a look of annoyance. So, little brother, how come you're such a mess? Couldn't you at least clean yourself up? It's not like you didn't have notice. You have known about this party for weeks.
Before he could answer, Kaylin spoke up. Richard had forgotten she was still standing next to him.
Please forgive your brother. It was not his fault. He came to guide me into Heartland, and I was late in coming. I pray he is not dishonored in your eyes because of me.
Michael's eyes glided down the length of her before returning to her face.
And you are...
Her back stiffened as she stood tall.
I am Kaylin Amnell.
Michael gave a slight smile and a small bow of his head.
So you are not my brother's escort, as I thought. And where have you traveled from?
It is a small place, far away. I am sure you would not know of it.
Michael didn't challenge the answer, but turned to his brother instead.
You will stay the night?
No, I have to go see Zed. He's been looking for me.
Michael's smile melted.
You should find better friends. No good can come of spending your time with that contrary old man.
He turned back to Kaylin. You, my dear, will be my guest tonight.
I have other arrangements, she said warily.
Michael reached around her with both arms, cupped both hands to her bottom and pulled the lower half of her body hard against him. His leg pressed between her thighs.
Change them.
His smile was as cold as winter night.
Remove your hands.
Her voice was hard and dangerous. Each stared into the other's eyes. Richard was dumbfounded. He couldn't believe what his brother was doing.
Michael, stop it!
They both ignored him and continued to confront one another. Faces close, eyes locked together. Richard stood next to them, feeling helpless. He could sense that both wanted him to stay out of it. His body tensed, muscles hard, readying to disregard the feeling.
You feel good, Michael whispered. I think I could fall in love with you.
Kaylin's breathing was slow and restrained.
You do not know the half of it. Her voice was even and controlled. Now remove your hands.
When he did not, she slowly placed the fingernail of her first finger on his chest, just below the hollow at the base of his neck. As they glared at each other, she slowly, ever so slowly, began to drag her nail downward, ripping his flesh open. Blood ran down skin in rivulets. For a brief moment, Michael didn't move, but then his eyes could not disguise the pain. He flung open his arms and staggered back a step. Without looking back, Kaylin stormed out of the house. Richard gave his brother an angry glare he could not suppress, and followed her out.
Chapter 4 Richard ran down the walkway to catch up with her. Kaylin's dress and long hair flowed behind as she marched along in the late afternoon sunlight. When she reached a tree, she stopped and waited. For the second time that day, she wiped blood off her hand. As he touched her shoulder, she turned, her calm face showing no emotion.
Kaylin, I'm sorry. She cut him off.
Do not apologize. What your brother did, he was not doing to me, he was doing to you.
To me?
What do you mean? Your brother is jealous of you. Her face softened.
He is not stupid, Richard. He knew I was with you, and he was jealous.
Richard took her arm and started walking down the road, away from Michael's house. He was furious with Michael, and at the same time he was ashamed of his anger. He felt as if he were letting his father down.
That's no excuse. He's first counselor. He has all anyone could want. I'm sorry I didn't put a stop to it.
I did not want you to. It was for me to do. What he wants is whatever you have. If you had stopped him, having me would be a contest he would have to win. This way he has no more interest in me. Besides, what he did to you, about your mother, was worse. Would you have wanted me to have stepped in on your behalf? Richard put his eyes back to the road. He choked off his anger. No, that was not for you to do. As they walked, the houses became smaller, closer together, but remained clean and well kept. Some of their owners were out taking advantage of the good weather to make repairs before winter. The air was clean and crisp, and Richard knew by the dryness of it that it would be a cold night. The right kind of night for a fire of birch logs, fragrant but not too hot. The white-fenced yards gave way to larger garden plots in front of small cottages set farther back from the road. As he walked, Richard plucked an oak leaf from a branch hanging close to the road. You seem to know a lot about people. You're very perceptive, I mean about why they do what they do. She shrugged. I guess. He tore little pieces off the leaf. Is that why they hunt you? She looked over as they walked, and when his eyes came to her, she answered. They hunt me because they fear truth. One reason I trust you is because you do not. He smiled at the compliment. He liked the answer, even though he wasn't sure what it meant. You aren't about to kick me, are you? A grin came to her face. You are getting close. She thought a moment, the smile fading, and went on. I am sorry, Richard, but for now you must trust me. The more I tell you, the greater the danger, to both of us. Still friends? Still friends. He threw the skeleton of the leaf away. But some day you will tell me all of it. She nodded. If I can, I promise I will.
Good, he said cheerfully. After all, I'm a seeker of truth.
Kaelin jerked to a halt, grabbed his shirt sleeve and spun him to face her wide eyes. Why did you say that? She demanded.
What, you mean seeker of truth? That's what Zed calls me. Ever since I was little, he says I always insist on knowing the truth of things, so he calls me Seeker of Truth.
He was surprised by her agitation. His eyes narrowed. Why? She started walking again. Never mind. Somehow he seemed to have broached a sensitive subject. His need to know the answers started to shoulder its way around in his mind. They hunted her because they feared truth, he thought, and she became upset when he said he was a seeker of truth. Maybe she had become upset, he decided, because it made her fear for him, too. Can you at least tell me who they are, those who hunt you? She continued to watch the road as she walked next to him. He didn't know if she was going to answer him, but at last she did. They are the followers of a very wicked man. His name is Darkon Rall. Please do not ask me any more for now. I do not wish to think of him. Darkon Rall. So, now he knew the name. The late afternoon sun was behind the hills of the Heartland Woods, allowing the air to cool as they passed through gently rolling hills of hardwood forest. They didn't talk. He didn't care to talk anyway, as his hand was hurting and he was feeling a little dizzy. A bath and a warm bed were what he wanted. Better to give her the bed, he thought. He would sleep in his favorite chair, the one with the squeak. That sounded good, too. It had been a long day, and he ached. By a stand of birch, he turned her up the small trail that would lead past his house. He watched her walking in front of him on the narrow path, picking spiderwebs off her face and arms as she broke the strands strung across their way. Richard was eager to get home. Along with his knife and the other things he had forgotten to take along, there was something else he had to have, a very important thing his father had given him. His father had made him the guardian of a secret, made him the keeper of a secret book, and had given Richard something to keep always as proof to the true owner of the book that it was not stolen, but rescued for safekeeping. It was a triangular-shaped tooth, 3 fingers wide. Richard had strung a leather thong to it so he could wear it around his neck. But like his knife and backpack, he had stupidly left the house without it. He was impatient to have it back around his neck. Without it, his father would be a thief, just as Michael said. Higher up, after an open area of bare rock, the maples, oaks, and birches began to give way to spruce. The forest floor lost its green for a quiet brown mat of needles. As they walked along, an uneasy feeling began to itch at him. He gently took Kaylin's sleeve between his thumb and forefinger, pulling her back. "Let me go first," he said quietly. She looked at him and obeyed without question. For the next half hour he slowed the pace, studying the ground and inspecting every branch close to the trail. Richard stopped at the base of the last ridge before his house and squatted them down beside a patch of ferns. "What's wrong?" she asked. He shook his head. "Maybe nothing," he whispered. "But someone has been up the trail this afternoon." He picked up a flattened pine cone, looking at it for a short time before tossing it away. "How do you know?" "Spider webs." He looked up the hill. "There aren't any spider webs across the trail. Someone has been up the trail and broken them. The spiders haven't had time to string more, so there aren't any." "Does anyone else live up this trail?" "No, but it could be just a traveler passing through." "But this trail isn't used much." Kaylin frowned, perplexed. "When I was walking in front, there were spider webs all over. I was picking them off my face every 10 steps. "That's what I'm talking about," he whispered. "No one had been up that part of the trail all day. But since the open place we came through, there haven't been any more." "How could that be?" He shook his head. "I don't know. Either someone came out of the woods back by the clearing and then went up the trail, a very hard way to travel." He looked her in the eyes. "Or they dropped in out of the sky. My house is over this hill. Let's keep our eyes sharp." Richard carefully led the two of them up the rise, both scanning the woods as they went. He wanted to run in the other direction, take them away from there, but he couldn't. He wasn't running away without the tooth his father had given him for safekeeping. At the top of the rise, they crouched behind a big pine and looked down on his house. Windows were broken, and the door, which he always locked, stood open. His possessions were scattered about on the ground. Richard stood. "It's been ransacked, just like my father's house." She grabbed a fistful of his shirt and hauled him back down.
"Richard,"
she whispered angrily, "your father may have come home just like this. Maybe he went in just like you are about to do, and they were waiting for him." She was right, of course. He ran his fingers through his hair, thinking. He looked back toward the house. Its back sat hard up against the woods with its door facing the clearing. Since it was the only door, anyone inside would expect him to come running in that way. That's where they would wait, if they were inside. "All right," he whispered back. "But there's something inside I have to get. I'm not leaving without it. We can sneak around the back. I'll get it, and then we will be away from here." Richard would have preferred not to take her, but he didn't want to leave her waiting on the trail alone. They made their way through the woods, through the tangle of brush, skirting the house, giving it a wide berth. When he reached the place where he would have to approach the back of the house, he motioned her to wait. She didn't like the idea, but he would take no argument. If there was anyone in there, he didn't want them getting her as well. Leaving Kaylin under a spruce tree, Richard started cautiously toward the house, following a serpentine route to stay on the areas of soft needles instead of treading on dry leaves. When he finally saw the back bedroom window, he stood frozen, listening. He heard no sound. Carefully, his heart pounding, he took slow, crouched steps. There was movement at his feet. A snake wriggled past his foot. He waited for it to pass. At the weathered back of his house, he gently put his hand on the bare wooden frame of the window and raised his head high enough to look inside. Most of the glass was broken out, and he could see that his bedroom was a mess. The bedding was slashed open. Prized books were torn apart and their pages strewn about the floor. To the far side of the room, the door to the front room was opened part way, but not enough to see beyond. Without a wedge under it, that was the spot the door always swung to on its own. Slowly, he put his head in the window and looked down at his bed. Below the window was the bottom bedpost, and hanging from it were his pack and the leather thong with the tooth, right where he had left them. He brought his arm up and started to reach through the window. There was a squeak from the front room, a squeak he knew well. He went cold with fright. It was the squeak his chair made. He had never fixed the squeak because it seemed a part of the chair's personality, and he couldn't bring himself to alter it. Soundlessly, he dropped back down. There could be no doubt. Someone was in the front room, sitting in his chair, waiting for him. Something caught his eye, making him look to the right. A squirrel sat on a rotting stump, watching him. "Please," he thought desperately to himself, "please don't start chattering to me to leave your territory." The squirrel watched him for a long moment, then jumped off the stump to a tree, scurried up, and was gone. Richard let out his breath, and raised himself back up to look in the window again. The door still stood as it had before. Quickly he reached inside and carefully lifted the pack and leather thong with the tooth off the bedpost, listening wide-eyed all the time for the slightest sound from beyond the door. His knife was on a small table on the other side of the bed. There was no chance of retrieving it. He lifted the pack through the window, being careful not to let it bump against any of the remaining shards of broken glass. With his booty in hand, Richard moved quickly but silently back the way he had come, resisting a strong urge to break into a run. He looked over his shoulder as he went to be sure no one followed. He put his head through the loop of leather and tucked the tooth into his shirt. He never let anyone see the tooth. It was only for the keeper of the secret book to see. Kaylin waited where he had left her. When she saw him, she sprang to her feet. He crossed his lips with his finger to let her know to keep silent. Slinging the pack over his left shoulder, he put his other hand gently on her back to move her along. Not wanting to go back the way they had come, he guided her through the woods to where the trail continued above his house. Spiderwebs strung across the trail glistened in the last rays of the setting sun, and they both breathed out in relief. This trail was longer and much more arduous, but it led where he was going, to Zed. The old man's house was too far to reach before dark, and the trail was too treacherous to travel at night, but he wanted to put as much distance as he could between them and whomever waited back at his house. While there was light, they would keep moving. Coldly, he wondered if whoever was in his house could be the same person who had murdered his father. His house was torn up just like his father's had been. Could they have been waiting for him as they had waited for his father? Could it be the same person? Richard wished he could have confronted him, or at least seen who it was. but something inside him had strongly warned him to get away. He gave himself a mental shake. He was letting his imagination have too free a rein. Of course something inside had warned him of danger, warned him to get away. He had already gotten away with his life when he shouldn't have, once this day. It was foolish to trust in luck once. Twice was arrogance of the worst kind. It was best to walk away.
Still, he wished he could have seen who it was, been sure there was no connection. Why would someone tear his house apart, as his father's had been torn apart? What if it was the same person? He wanted to know who had killed his father. He burned to know.
Even though he had not been allowed to see his father's body at his house, he had wanted to know how he was killed. Chase had told him, very gently. But he had told him. His father's belly had been cut open, and his guts had been spread out all over the floor.
How could anyone do that? Why would anyone do that?
It made him sick and light-headed to think of it again. Richard swallowed back the lump in his throat.
Well?
Her voice jolted him out of his thoughts.
What?
Well, what?
Well, did you get whatever it was you went to get?
Yes.
So what was it?
What was it? It was my backpack. I had to get my backpack.
She turned to face him with both hands on her hips and a scowl on her face.
Richard Cipher, you expect me to believe you risked your life to get your backpack?
Kalen, you are coming close to getting kicked.
He couldn't manage a smile. Her head was cocked to the side, and she continued to give him a sideways look, but his remark had taken the fire out of her.
Fair enough, my friend, she said gently. Fair enough.
He could tell Kalen was a person who was used to getting answers when she asked a question. As the light faded and colors muted into grayness, Richard started thinking of places to spend the night. He knew of several wayward pines along the way that he had used on many occasions. There was one at the edge of a clearing just off the trail ahead. He could see the tall trees standing out against the fading pinks of the sky, standing above all the other trees. He led Kalen off the trail toward it. The tooth hanging around his neck nagged at him. His secrets nagged at him. He wished his father had never made him the keeper of the secret book. A thought that had occurred to him back at his house, but he had ignored, forced itself to the front of his mind. The books at his house looked like they had been torn apart in a rage, maybe because none was the right book. What if it was the secret book they were looking for? But that was impossible. No one but the true owner even knew of the book. And his father, and himself, and the thing the tooth came from. The thought was too far-fetched to consider, so he decided he wouldn't. He tried very hard not to. Fear, from what had happened on Blunt Cliff and from what had been waiting for him at his house, seemed to have sapped his strength. His feet felt almost too heavy to lift as he trudged across the mossy ground. Just before he went through the brush into the clearing, he stopped to swat a fly that was biting his neck. Kalen grabbed his wrist in mid-swat. Her other hand clamped over his mouth. He went rigid. Looking into his eyes, she shook her head, then released his wrist, putting the hand behind his head while continuing to keep her other hand over his mouth. By the expression on her face, he knew she was terrified he would make a sound. She slowly lowered him to the ground, and by his cooperation he let her know he would obey. Her eyes held him as hard as her hands. Continuing to watch his eyes, she put her face so close to his he could feel the warmth of her breath on his cheek.
"Listen to me."
Her whisper was so low he had to concentrate to hear her.
"Do exactly as I say."
The expression on her face made him afraid to blink.
Do not move. No matter what happens, do not move, or we are dead.
She waited. He gave a small nod.
Let the flies bite, or we are dead.
She waited again. He gave another small nod. With a flick of her eyes, she indicated for him to look across the clearing. He slowly moved his head just a little so he could see. There was nothing. She kept her hand over his mouth. He heard a few grunts, like a wild boar. Then he saw it. He flinched involuntarily. She clamped her hand harder against his mouth. From across the clearing, fading evening light reflected in two glowing green eyes as their gaze swept in his direction. It stood on 2 feet, like a man, and was about a head taller than him. He guessed it weighed 3 times as much. Flies bit his neck, but he tried to ignore them. He looked back to her eyes. She had not looked to the beast. She knew what waited across the clearing. Instead, she continued to watch him, waiting to see if he would react in a way that would betray them. He nodded again to reassure her. Only then did she remove her hand from his mouth and put it over his wrist, holding it to the ground. Trickles of blood ran across her neck as she lay motionless on the soft moss, letting the flies bite. He could feel each sharp sting as they bit his neck. Grunts came short and low, and both turned their heads slightly to see. With astonishing speed, it charged into the center of the clearing, moving in a shuffling, sideways motion. It grunted as it came. Glowing green eyes searched, while its long tail slowly swished the air. The beast cocked its head to the side and pricked its short, rounded ears ahead, listening. Fur covered the great body everywhere except its chest and stomach, which were covered with a smooth, glossy, pinkish skin that rippled with corded muscles underneath. Flies buzzed around, something smeared over the taut skin. Throwing back its head, the beast opened its mouth, hissing into the cold night air. Richard could see the hot breath turning to vapor between teeth as big as his fingers. To keep from shrieking in terror, Richard concentrated on the pain of the biting flies. They could not sneak away or run. The thing was that close, and he knew that fast. A scream erupted from the ground right in front of them, making Richard flinch. Instantly, the beast charged toward the two of them in a sideways run. Kaelin's fingers dug into his wrist, but otherwise she didn't move. Richard was paralyzed as he saw it pounce. A rabbit, its ears covered with the flies, bolted right in front of them, screaming again, and was swept up and torn in half in a blink. The front half went down in one swallow. The beast stood right over them and tore at the insides of the rabbit, taking some of the gore and smearing it on its pink-skinned chest and stomach. The flies, even the ones biting Richard's and Kaelin's necks, returned to the creature to feast. The rest of the rabbit was taken by each hind leg, ripped in half, and eaten. When done, the beast cocked its head again, listening. The two of them were right underneath it, both holding their breath. Richard wanted to scream. Large wings spread from its back. Against the failing light, Richard could see the veins pulsing through the thin membranes that were its wings. The beast took one last look around and skittered sideways across the clearing. It straightened, hopped twice, and flew off, disappearing in the direction of the boundary. The flies were gone with it. Both flopped onto their backs, breathing fast, exhausted by the level of fright. Richard thought of the country people who had told him of things from the sky that ate people. He hadn't believed them. He believed them now. Something in his pack was poking him in the back, and when he could stand it no longer, he rolled onto his side, propping himself up on one elbow. He was drenched in sweat, and it now felt like ice in the cold evening air.
Kaylin still lay on her back with her eyes closed, breathing rapidly. A few strands of her hair stuck to her face, but most of it flowed out over the ground. Sweat covered her, too. Around her neck it was tinted red. He felt an overwhelming sense of sadness for her, for the terrors in her life. He wished she didn't have to face the monsters she seemed to know all too well. Kaylin, what was that thing? She sat up, taking a deep breath as she looked down at him. Her hand came up and hooked some of her hair behind her ear. The rest fell forward over her shoulders. It was a long-tailed gar. Reaching out, she picked up one of the biting flies by its wings. Somehow it must have gotten caught in a fold of his shirt and was smashed when he flopped onto his back. This is a blood fly. Gars use them to hunt. The flies flush out the quarry. The gar grabs it. They smear some on themselves for the flies. We are very lucky. She held the blood fly right in front of his nose to make her point. Long-tailed gars are stupid. If it had been a short-tailed gar, we would be dead right now. Short-tailed gars are bigger and a lot smarter. She paused to make sure she had his full attention. They count their flies. He was frightened, exhausted, confused, and in pain. He wanted this nightmare to end. With a moan of frustration, he sagged back down onto his back, not caring any more about whatever it was that was poking him. Kaylin, I'm your friend. After those men attacked us, and you didn't want to tell me more about what is going on, I didn't press you. His eyes were closed. He couldn't bear the scrutiny of her eyes. Now someone is after me, too. For all I know, it could be the same person who murdered my father. It's not just you anymore. I can't go home either. I think I have a right to know at least some of what's going on. I'm your friend, not your enemy. Once, when I was little, I got a fever and almost died. Zed found a root that saved me. Until today, that was the only time I've ever been close to death. Today I was close 3 times. What do I— Her fingertips touched his lips to silence him. You're right. I will answer your questions. Except about me. For now, I cannot. He sat up and looked at her. She was starting to shake with cold. Shrugging the straps of the pack off his shoulders, he pulled a blanket out and wrapped it around her. You promised me a fire, she said as she shivered. Is it a promise you intend to keep? He couldn't help but to laugh as he got to his feet. Sure. There's a wayward pine right over there on the other side of the clearing. Or if you want, there are others up the trail a little way. She looked up and gave him a worried frown. Right, he smiled. We'll find another wayward pine up the trail. What is a wayward pine? She asked. Chapter 5 Richard held back the boughs of the tree. This is a wayward pine, he announced. Friend to any traveler. It was dark inside. Kaylin held the boughs aside so he could see by the moonlight to strike steel to flint and start a fire. Clouds scudded across the moon, and they could see their breath in the cold air. Richard had stayed here before on trips to and from Zed's, and had made a small fire pit of stones. There was dry wood, and to the far side a stack of dry grass he had used for bedding. Since he didn't have his knife, he was thankful he had left a supply of tinder. The fire was quickly started, filling the interior of the tree's skirt with flickering light. Richard was not quite able to stand under the branches where they began growing out from the trunk. The branches were bare near the trunk, with needles on the ends, leaving a hollow interior. The lower branches dipped all the way to the ground. The tree was fire-resistant, as long as one was careful. The smoke from the small fire curled up the center, near the trunk. The needles grew so thick that even in a good rain it remained dry inside. Richard had waited out many a rain in a wayward pine. He always enjoyed staying in the small but cozy shelters as he traveled the heartland. Now he was especially glad for its concealing shelter. Before their encounter with the long-tailed gar, there had been plants and animals in the forest he had strong respect for, but there had been nothing in the woods he feared. Kaylin sat herself down cross-legged in front of the fire. She was still shivering and